Hi everyone, I'm Layla and I'm going to read the Transfiguration in Mark chapter 9 verses 2 through 10. 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John to the top of a mountain. No one else was there. Suddenly, his face began to shine with glory, and his clothing became dazzling white, far more glorious than any earthly process could ever make it. Then Elijah and Moses appeared and began talking with Jesus. "Teacher, this is wonderful," Peter exclaimed. "We will make three shelters here, one for each of you," he said. This just to be talking, for he didn't know what else to say, and they were all terribly frightened. But while he was still speaking these words, a cloud covered them, blotting out the sun, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my beloved son, listen to him." Then suddenly they looked around, and Moses and Elijah were gone, and only Jesus was with them. As they descended the mountainside, he told them never to mention what they had seen until after he had risen from the dead. So they kept it to themselves, but often talked about it and wondered what he meant by rising from the dead.
Today we are commemorating Christ's transfiguration on a Palestinian mountaintop. Transfiguration Sunday functions as a sort of lesser sibling to Reign of Christ Sunday. Each serves a similar role to mark the transition from one liturgical season to another. Reign of Christ Sunday is actually the final Sunday of the liturgical year. It's the culmination of the annual journey with Jesus from the beginning to the end. The Sunday after it is the first Sunday of Advent. A new liturgical year commences. Transfiguration Sunday usually comes at the end of the Epiphany season. But because we celebrated Fat Sunday or Love Sunday combo on that date in February, I've chosen to incorporate the traditional transfiguration story into Mark's chronological account of Jesus' journey to Jerusalem and beyond. So here we are on the mountaintop with Jesus, sharing with Peter and James and John the transfiguration. But really, just what is transfiguration? It's not a word we use a lot, is it? When you hear that word, what comes to mind? What might it mean to you to be transfigured? The dictionary says that to transfigure is to change an outward form or appearance, to transform, to change so as to glorify or exalt, to change the appearance of a person or thing very much, usually in a very positive and often spiritual way. A complete change of form or appearance into a more beautiful or spiritual state. Sample sentences include, as she gazed down at the baby, her face was transfigured with tenderness. The assassination somehow transfigured Kennedy into a modern American saint. In this light, the junk undergoes transfiguration. It shines. Transfiguration, then, is more than transformation. It's not just a matter of change of form or appearance. Transfiguration characterizes change or transformation as something greater. Clearly, on the mountain that night, Jesus was changed into something or someone more wonderful than those three disciples had ever encountered or even imagined. His status was elevated in their eyes and lives in a powerful and mystical manner. Mark says they were awestruck. Who wouldn't be? Awestruck by the experience, terrified, really. It's no small thing to find oneself so close to the heart of God, to see so deeply into the mind of Christ, to be so thoroughly caught up in the Spirit as the wind whipped across the mountaintop. Process theologian Bruce Epperly reminds us that historically, mountaintops are seen as places of revelation. They are literally, figuratively, and spiritually closer to heaven than the flatlands. They're places of perspective and vision of the far horizons of divinity. Well, this is exactly the sort of place you would expect a transfiguration to take place. Epperly continues, the disciples are invited to see Jesus' quantum reality, the reality disguised by his flesh and bone. On the mountaintop, divine light shines through his cells as well as his soul. Remember in today's call to worship, how another process theologian thinker, Bruce Sangwin, calls the Holy One the uncreated light that is lighting all, the flame burning within, the radiance in all of creation. This is what Peter, James, and John encountered that night on the mountain with Jesus. His quantum reality, the core reality disguised by his flesh and bones, the uncreated light, the radiance inherent in all of creation. Have you ever had such an encounter? Have you ever had a mountaintop experience that rattled your bones and shook your soul? The word going round is that such encounters are rare these days. It seems so often that God has retired to heaven, leaving us to our own devices. Perhaps there are too many of us who think we have it all figured out, or who want to be in control and run the show ourselves. Who needs God when we have the security and comfort of wealth and power of scientific and technological knowledge? When we have Google and Apple and Amazon? When we can land a rover on Mars? God's pretty antiquated, right? Mountaintop mythology hardly moves us when everything we could possibly need or want is at our command. Just tell Alexa or Siri what it is, and it will appear before you know it. But really, is that all there is? As wonderful as our scientific and technological accomplishments are, do we sometimes wonder if they are enough? If there isn't more to life? Cosmologists and physicists posit an expanding universe, and process thinkers speak of an expanding God. The great American social psychologist William James posited what is my favorite definition of the God, if there can be such a thing. He speaks of God as the more. You see, whatever we say about creation and the Creator, it is inadequate. It is fraught with our very human limitations. No matter how powerful or wealthy or brilliant we may be, there is always, always more. God is that more. I've been touched by those brilliant scientists who hold a place for mystery and wonder, even as they unravel complex dimensions of the universe and of existence. Thinkers like Einstein and Lauren Eisley, theologians like Robert Russell and Nancy Murphy, who've made room for the more, who understand the poetry of Elizabeth Barrett Browning, who saw earth crammed with heaven and every common bush afire with God, or Gerard Manley Hopkins, who wrote that the world is charged with the grandeur of God, that nature is never spent. He says there lives the deepest, there lives the dearest, freshest, deep down things. Whatever these brilliant minds discover or uncover, they never lose sight of the beauty of nature, of the possibilities of transfiguration, if you will. The title for today's reflection on the word comes from our words of preparation. I was moved by Darwin's belief in endless forms most beautiful. That's the universe I believe we inhabit, one in which the transfiguration of the Christ is a model for the potentiality of transfiguration in all that is. Bruce Sangwin again proclaims, from an evolutionary perspective, the entire universe is a transfiguration. He says all life on our planet began as a simple cell, and from this relative simplicity emerged what Darwin called endless forms most beautiful. All that we see around us, including our own bodies and our minds, are transfigurations of that originating fireball. On the mountaintop, then, we can think of Jesus being bathed in uncreated light as the spiritual dimension of an evolutionary transfiguration that never, ever ends. an evolutionary transfiguration that never ends. And we are part of just such a reality. If we will, we may be transfigured into those beings that God intended when God breathed the breath of life into the dust of the earth, bringing forth humankind in God's very image and likeness. Remember, God blessed us and called us good. Will we yet be so? Will we fulfill that promise? Epperle concludes his reflection, "While we seldom see the inner light of our companions, the story of Jesus' transfiguration invites us to look for more in ourselves and others." He claims there are angels in boulders and revelations in the commonplace. The whole earth is filled with God's glory and charged with God's grandeur. Let me close with this experience you may have heard before from Thomas Merton's Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander. Merton recalls a particular experience of transformation, not at midnight on a windswept mountaintop, but in the middle of his mundane daily routine right downtown. He writes, "In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut, in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like walking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation into a special world." He says, "This sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a relief and such a joy to me that I almost laughed out loud. I have the immense joy of being a man, a member of a race in which God himself became incarnate. As if the sorrows and stupidities of the human condition could overwhelm me now that I realize what we all are. And if only everybody could realize this. But it cannot be explained. There is no way of telling people that they are all walking around shining like the sun." And then he concludes, "It was as if I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts, the depths of their hearts where neither sin nor desire nor self-knowledge can reach, the core of their reality, the person that each one is in God's eyes. If only they could all see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time, there would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, no more greed. But this cannot be seen, only believed and understood by a particular gift." You see, the particular gift of endless forms most beautiful is this. It's past time that we accept the peculiar gift God gives us to see the endless beauty of the forms of creation in ourselves, in others, in the whole of creation. It's past time for us, bathed from the beginning in the beauty of uncreated light, to recognize our power to walk around shining like the sun. And in the process, to put an end to war, hatred, cruelty and greed, racism, white supremacy, Christian nationalism, sexism, heterosexism, ageism, ableism, you name it, to put an end to all those things that separate us, that keep us wary of the other, that mitigate against our gathering in communion all together at God's welcome table. Friends, the time is now to make it so in our lives and in the world around us. May today be the day of our transfiguration. Amen.